Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Bird to your mother, it's time for another episode of Birds with Friends. Just some high-flying, ran-fast, vertical stems of professors from Penn watching eagles eat and pray like Pazookies on birthdays. It's Philadelphia, Marissa, Bo, and Zach kicking it cooler than three penguins till Zach runs off with his valet keys. He's a real nuanced goose. Pull up a branch, get loose, it's time for some juice on some
Birds with Friends.
The early bird gets the worm, but prefers getting turned like a turn on some
Birds with Friends.
Marissa, Bo, and Zach are here to squawk. Don't miss the mistress talk on some.
I have a radio hit that I'm late for. I'm going to give my prediction. You guys can stick on. Is that okay?
Unbelievable. Now we find out who has priority. This is ridiculous.
We've been on for an hour and 35 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Looking forward to the post-game pod.
Hello, everybody. And welcome to Birds with Friends at 1:03 a.m. Friday morning after Thursday night's second preseason game. The Eagles and Browns settle things in a tie. That's okay. You know, we didn't want Michael Dunn to lose, but you probably didn't want the Eagles to lose. So it's a fine result. But the real story here, Zach, is, you know, you have to be willing and open-eyed when greatness is afoot. And
are you talking about you as a writer?
I think it's undeniable at this point. It's been two games. I think we can say definitively that in the sixth round, the Eagles drafted the next great quarterback. Tanner McKee is him.
That is premature. I wouldn't say he's the next great quarterback. I would say he's exceeding expectations. He's been playing well throughout the summer. He played well tonight. He played significantly better than Marcus Mariota tonight. And Nick Sirianni said it's too soon to make this a competition for the number two spot. He said Mariota's the backup. But it's clear watching McKee that the Eagles have something here. What that is, too soon to say, but they have something here.
It is wild that once again history is repeating itself. You know, the Eagles signed Carson Wentz to a mega extension. They draft a quarterback. That quarterback takes his job in his first year.
Yeah.
Now the Eagles have signed Jalen Hurts to a mega contract, and Tanner McKee is here. And as a rookie, he's going to take that job.
Well, that's not going to happen. We know that's not going to happen, but Tanner McKee could be a cost-controlled backup quarterback for the next 3 years.
Maybe we got to get closer to the mic when we do these.
Closer to the mic. And we're getting comments about the – I don't know if it's the – we try clearing off the camera.
Yeah, we got no producer tonight. We're flying by the seat of
our pants. No, it's the lighting at these places. The lighting's not for podcasting. The lighting's for coaching or whatever they do in these boxes. But we're on site. We're giving you the feel for the stadium. If we turn this around, you would see – the field in front of us. You know, it's the preseason when they don't have the logo midfield or the names in the end zones, right? But no, as we were discussing with Tanner McKee, we maybe overreacted to the Clayton Thorson experience in saying that you can't find a quarterback.
Who's we? I never said that. Said he wasn't clapping Thepin, wasn't it? But the upside of hitting on that is certainly worth it.
But you did write about quarterbacks after round what?
Yeah,
round
the history is not good, but the upside of it makes it worth it, I think, potentially. Here's the deal. A sixth round rookie, okay, in his rookie preseason, goes 22 of 32 over the course of preseason for 254 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions, 7.9 yards per attempt. That's Tom Brady in 2000, Zach. Tanner McKee.
Look at that. That was well done.
20 of 38 for 295 yards, one touchdown, zero interceptions, 7.8 yards per attempt. I don't think it's a stretch to compare the two.
Well, I think it's a stretch to compare the two, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that what Tanner McKee's doing this summer is the story of the preseason. And what competition?
Potentially the story of the year.
Well,
nationally, internationally.
Well, he does have a lot of international ties, right? What country in South America was he in?
Brazil for two years. Yes. And what's so, I think, extra special about this is what another huge hit for the Beowulf Camp Crush.
It always goes back to the Beowulf Camp Crush, right? Well, the thing is, when you name 30 players, you're bound to hit on one of them.
No. As you said, Tanner McKee went on his LDS mission to Brazil. This is a man who's clearly open to multiple partners. Right? So for me to have Tanner McKee along with Christian Ellis, who I thought was good tonight, and Reed Blankenship and Moro Ajomo, the core four.
The core four?
I think he's happy. Okay. I think we're all happy.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's I'm with you. I'm McKee playing well. I don't think it reflects anything on you, although you did say, I'll give you credit. Bo deserves credit here. We were walking off the practice field about 2 days in. He said, I hate to say it, but I see something in McKee.
And honestly, I should have trusted my gut.
Yeah.
Because what I did see right away
was Mike Lennon.
No, I mean the neck. Yeah, I did say he has a bit of a Glennon neck situation. Not quite fully giraffe like Glennon, but what are Reed and Sloan's
Ryan
favorite
Mal,
animals?
What's that?
What are their favorite animals?
Favorite animals.
Reed and Sloan.
You know, I'm familiar with Reed and Sloan. I was thinking their favorite animals.
I got to meet Reed for the first time tonight.
Yeah, Reed came to the game. Their favorite animals.
They don't have like one that they love.
They have like stuffed animals that they love, but not like
not actual. In general. Okay.
Yeah, they're not. I've taken them to the zoo. Okay.
Yeah, loves a giraffe.
They all know my favorite animal.
Let me guess. The early bird.
No, but that would be a good one. No, the zebra.
Oh, interesting. Why?
Well, two reasons. It begins with a Z. Okay. And this is going to sound cheesy, but no two zebras have the same stripes. And I think that's kind of like reflective of people, right? You know, you try to find you try to find a good in everybody. So
zebra's a little bit lazy, though, which is not like you.
I took Reed and Sloan to the zoo, and I was explaining to them how you can find something worthwhile in every zebra because everyone's unique. But let's get to the.
So what I was going to say, what I did, and you know, this is not about me, but
it's never about you.
What I did see right away, and what I think was clear right away, is that you know we have seen these quarterbacks. Whether they are, you know, Clapping Thippin or undrafted guys like Carson Strong or even guys like Nick Mullins who have been in camp. Like the jitteriness, the holding of the ball, the slow to process. Right away, I thought it was clear that Tanner McKee was seeing things, making quick decisions, and getting the ball out accurately. What I hadn't seen was that all of these passes almost like 100% were within 10 sure. to 15 yards of line of scrimmage. It was like, is this guy just a check down? I think he was just reading what the defense was giving him. And what we've seen here is it's wild. I mean, I don't think he took a bad snap tonight. Like he was 10 of 18 for 147 tonight. He had five balls that were like stone cold drops, hit a guy in both hands. He had one throwaway and two other catchable balls. And he's throwing the ball downfield. He's identifying these one-on-one matchups. And I do not think at all that it is – we talked about it last week. Is it realistic to think that he could push Marcus Mariota for the number two job? Last week I said I don't think so. I think they're a little bit too pot committed to Marcus Mariota. There is a much bigger sample size here. You know, Marcus Mariota, even as aesthetically ugly as his game is, and boy, is it aesthetically ugly, you know, he was 18th out of 33 quarterbacks last year in EPA per dropback, which doesn't even factor in his ability with his legs as just a runner. As a backup quarterback, that's great. But I don't think it's too early anymore. I don't think that's crazy anymore. I think it's just a real thing. Now, Nick Sirianni was asked about this. Tim McManus did a good job framing it like, you are Mr. Competitive Guy. Is it too early to say that Tanner McKee can push Marcus Mariota? He said way too early. Now, of course, he has to say that. You know, he has to protect the veteran. He's not gonna take a shot there. But if the idea behind Marcus Mariota as the backup quarterback is that you can run a similar offense, I'm starting to think that is the wrong idea, because to call this like the quarterback inclusive part of the run game is a big part of the offense. But you know what's a bigger part of the offense? AJ Brown and Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert. And I don't think that anybody in the organization right now would trust that Marcus Mariota can consistently get the ball to AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert. And has been so impressive about Tanner McKee is that he is identifying these matchups and he is throwing these catchable balls to guys like Tyree Cleveland and Deion Kane. If he's throwing those same balls to AJ Brown and Devontae Smith and getting the ball out quickly, like I think they could be okay on offense. I think they could stay above water.
A few things here. First off, sounds like a good column. I look forward to reading that. Number one. Number two, I don't disagree with you as far as the rationale. Number three, what jumps out to me when I watch McKee, in addition to what you say, that I didn't see in the first 2 weeks of camp, because he really had to throw these outs, if you will, more than he does now, or more than he did early on, is the zip that he has on the ball. He had a pass to the left sideline over here that it came out of his hand differently than quarterbacks we've seen in the past. That jumped out to me. To take this further, though, not to play, well, I suppose to play devil's advocate, but to try to put myself in the shoes of the coaches for a second. Marcus Mariota's been there, done that, right? He's taken a team to the playoffs. He's played in big games. And similarly to how you say he would benefit playing with A.J. Brown and Dallas Goedert and Devontae Smith, he's not going against complex defenses right now. He's not 100%. Going against top defenders right now. And those holes he gave a good answer. I talked about it last week when he said the speed of the game's faster, but so are the players. Well, those defenders, those first team defenders are better than the third team defenders. So, but your point is taken, and Marcus Mariota has been objectively bad this summer. And it's just, he misfires on these passes that
so wildly.
The interception tonight was like 3 yards over Grant Calcaterra's head.
This guy was wide open.
Yeah. And we've talked about these throws that he has at practice. Where like there was
one Calcaterra, like every day is going home, looking in the mirror, like trying to jump as high as he possibly can. Googling like rocket boots. Like
There was one on Tuesday when I was standing next to Shield at practice.
Flex.
And it is Flex. Shield's a national writer. I was trying to learn something. And Marcus Mariota throws it to the left sideline. That's where we were standing. And I'm like, like the ball went over our heads. It's like, who's he throwing that to?
Yeah, that is a Thorson special.
Yeah. So point being there that I haven't been as impressed with Mariota It's been a few weeks since I've been talking about that quarterback documentary, but man, there have been throws where he even had it there where you're like, where is he throwing this ball to? And that is a concern. And I hadn't thought about it the way you just framed it, but that is the way they should think that, all right, if Jalen Hurts isn't in there, your offense is your best players, right? Yeah. That should be your focus, not how you can run the offense you have. It's how you can maximize your best players. Jalen Hurts, when he's on the field, is perhaps your best player or one of your best, you know, one of your best players. So you run an offense to maximize him. When he's not out there, Tanner McKee or Marcus Mariota would not be one of your best players. So therefore, what you do, and no offense to Tanner McKee, what you do there is you highlight Devontae, AJ, and Dallas. So you bring up a good point. I haven't thought about it framed that way, but I'm probably going to steal that now.
Yeah, I mean, listen. If you're just looking at the odds and like what's more likely, what's more strikely, as we once played, a guy who has been in the league as long as Marcus Mariota has and has been a competent quarterback, you know, barely, but a competent quarterback.
No, he's been competent.
A guy who, as I said, was average for a starting quarterback last year by the numbers. Obviously, it's more likely that that guy is going to be adequate in a pinch than a sixth round rookie. But like this business for the coaches and for the personnel guys, like it's about trusting your eyes. And like, there's no way that you could watch what we've been watching over the past 2 weeks and think that Marcus Mariota is better right now. You can contextualize it and say that, yeah, he is working against maybe better defenses. His particular skill set is not as well suited to shine in these things. And I think that there is a case where, like, you know, if Marcus Mariota is exactly as we've seen this summer and Tanner McKee is 75% of what we've seen this summer, like, yeah, you probably can build an offense that could win a game better with Marcus Mariota because you can lean into his legs and maybe you can scrap things out. Whereas if Tanner McKee is a pumpkin, it's going to be ugly. He doesn't have the ability to save things with his legs.
I
got to trust my eyes.
So we go back to the scouting process here for a bit. I mean, not to get big picture, but I think when the Eagles looked at the tape of Tanner McKee, they saw plays that were made, but the offense, like whether it was the offensive line or the receivers, just didn't help him out. And I know this is a hypothetical you can probably make for 30 quarterbacks, but if you put him with Alabama skill players, right, what does he look like? Because he didn't have that type of team last year, although I hear Michael Wilson's playing real well out in Arizona. Little birdie said that. But
I think Tanner McKee is already, and not hyperbole, the third best quarterback in the NFC East.
Well, that is ridiculous, Bo.
Why?
You think he's the third best quarterback in the NFC East? You think he's better than Daniel Jones?
Yes.
Well, that is preposterous. That is preposterous. You see this guy play two preseason games against backups, and you think he's better than Daniel Jones? I mean,
I do.
Daniel Jones would have done that tonight, and he would have run.
I have never in my life I've seen Daniel Jones play live a lot. I have never seen him make any of these throws.
You've seen Daniel Jones play against really good defensive line every week. You've seen Daniel Jones play, you know, against Darius Slay. And I mean, come on. That is.
I mean, and the other thing about Tanner McKee, he's pretty classy.
He's pretty classy. How so?
I just mean, as if I know you are so fond of the Giants that like the sheen of classiness is something that you're always going to,
he's Stanford educated. Go to. He's Stanford educated.
I talked to some of the guys in the locker room tonight about, Tanner McKee. It is funny, like the dynamic of that quarterback room, I think, because you've got Jalen Hurts, you've got Marcus Mariota, you've got Ian Book, all these guys who like are very, very fast for quarterbacks. And then you got Tanner McKee, who's bumbling around a little bit at 6'6", whatever he is. And I was like, do the guys like make fun of you? Is that a thing? He said, well, yeah, like a little bit sometimes. Like Fred Johnson, you know, the monstrous veteran tackle, likes to tell me that he's faster than me and that he can beat me in a race. And so then I went to talk to Fred Johnson and he's like, oh yeah, I'm not, I'm not telling Marcus Mariota I'm faster than him. It's like it's Tanner McGee.
This is a book home.
But,
I like this.
But he and Dennis Kelly were both, you know, these guys have been in the league for a while. Fred Johnson's entering his fifth year. Dennis Kelly's entering year 12. And they're like, you know, for a rookie, it is a little bit unique. The way like he takes command of the huddle, but it's not inorganic. It's a little bit like it's what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know the word you're looking for.
It is organic. Okay. What's the word? Like the word we used for Sirianni all the time. It's authentic. Yeah.
It's authentic.
Okay. And listen, like I've heard stories of in the spring, Tanner McKee's got like all the rookies after OTA practice or rookie mini camps. He's got these guys in the parking lot, like walking, doing a walkthrough. Like going through the playbook. And he said at the podium that like his job as the quarterback is to know the offense inside and out. So if somebody comes to him, he knows the route depth and he knows the checks and he knows the splits and all these things. And I don't know. I'm a little bit smitten.
Okay. A quick question here.
I think he should start on at least 10 teams in the NFL this year.
Well, that's ridiculous. But
I mean, there's some really bad starters.
Yeah. I think it's premature. I do want, you do this to me a lot. I want to do this to you. Let's go behind the story for a second. So you go up to Fred Johnson in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, Fred Johnson's not typically like a popular guy for reporters to approach in the locker room. What
We've
was
talked
Fred
before?
Sure he had. I know he had. I've spoken to him before. But I'm saying after a preseason game, it's not like there's a crowd around Fred Johnson's locker. What's Fred Johnson's reaction when you go up? Is he eager to talk? Is he like, what's this going to be about?
He was happy to talk. I approached him as he was on his way to the shower to say I wanted to talk to him. He said, yeah, he'd be right back. This is one where there was like nobody left in the locker room. And the one of the PR officials said they were going to close it up. I was like, I just got like a minute for Fred Johnson, if you don't mind, which it's got to be the first time he's heard that. But yeah, we made it happen.
Yeah. Were they asking why? Or were they like, all right, I respect that, Bo?
I don't know. I wasn't talking to them. I was talking to Fred Johnson and Dennis Kelly.
Gotcha. And Dennis Kelly.
Well, Dennis was a little bit before, but their lockers are right next to each other.
Gotcha.
I
noticed, you know, some of the players, I don't know if I start, well, I started it. I got to finish it. Some of the players they give this time of year, there's not enough lockers for players. So guys got to share lockers. And even like Alameda Zaccheaus shares a locker this time of year. Fred Johnson gets his own. Fred Johnson gets his own. I'm assuming it's because Fred Johnson's so big that, right? Like,
yeah, I guess you can't split.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, if you have a 350-pound guy, you got to give him space to change. Whereas, like Zaccheaus, you know, he's what 180.
Fred Johnson's been here longer. I don't know.
True. Ask Chris Long how he feels about having to share a locker back when he was. Yeah.
I have a question for the live viewers.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a weird thing? Is this an unbecoming thing to do? This is popcorn, okay? I've got popcorn in this cup. And this is what I usually do if I have popcorn during the game, okay? I just pour it out.
Well, you pull it off well. I don't think it's becoming, but
I do that because I don't want my hands to get greasy.
You don't want popcorn hands.
On the keyboard.
I hear you there, yeah.
But I do feel a little bit self-conscious about people behind me looking at me just like pouring popcorn down my gullet.
But you know what? Those popcorn hands, then they get all over the keyboard, and
you can't. I mean, I can't. I would rather not have popcorn than use it with my hands. But like, am I getting judged by the people behind me? What do we think on the chat?
Well, I think people at the game are watching the game. They're not watching you.
Speak for yourself.
You really think they're watching you? You really think people are like?
I think people behind me may not be focused on me, but they see me continually just pouring popcorn down my mouth. They're probably thinking, that's a little bit weird. I don't know.
Are we ready to do your grouse yet?
People are saying totally socially acceptable behavior. Okay. So, okay. I like that. Chopsticks would be a good idea, but I don't know if I'm going to remember to bring chopsticks every time.
So our audience knows that when something bothers Bo, he is not shy about it. And Bo has a grouse this year that you'll hear all season.
I have two grouses.
Okay.
One is completely unrelated, but
these windows are getting on your nerves. And I see it now. It's the preseason. I can only imagine what's going to happen in a high, you know, then the opener, the season opener is a Thursday night game against Minnesota. I can only imagine.
Really generous from the chat. It seems like the chat is unanimously behind my popcorn move. So that makes me feel better.
I can only imagine a high leverage, you know, Kirk Cousins trying to hit Justin Jefferson. Reed Blankenship makes a break on the ball. And all of a sudden, as Reed Blankenship's making a break on the ball, he passes the bar. And you can't see the break. And you just exclaim.
Well, I don't know if you've explained what's going on here yet.
I thought we discussed it.
Did we talk about it?
Did we discuss it after the open practice?
Did we? I don't remember if we touched on it. So here's the deal.
I know you talked about it on Twitter.
The Eagles have changed the glass in the press box. To me, the glass is the most important thing in a press box, okay? Because you're there to watch the game. For the entirety of my time on the beat, the Eagles have had, in my estimation, the best glass in the league. Now, there are a few where it's totally open, like the Superdome. But the Eagles' glass was pristine, nicely cleaned, very large, and no separators between the panes of glass. It was all clear. You could see everything. Now, there are some things that come into play about the actual location of the press box, like where is it sightline-wise. The Eagles one is good. I would have had them top of the list in glass pane. And I think that's the most important thing. If I'm ranking the most important things in a press box, it's like view, which is location and glass. Then it's like space, work space around you. And then everything else is less necessary. Those are the two main things. Eagles have great space in the press box. It's a good press box space-wise. The one we were in Baltimore, very cramped, not good. But they made the decision this offseason so that they could sell tickets for concerts to put in a new kind of glass that can be removed for concerts. And so that means it's on this sliding thing, and the panes are not see-through, and they are enormous. And if you are stuck in a bad spot, it's going to really ruin your viewing experience. I think they're going to hear it from the Eagles officials who are behind us in the press box. They are going to have a really hard time seeing the game now. Listen, the Eagles should be making their decisions for the betterment of the organization. And if they're making more money off selling those concert tickets, good for them. That's great. They should not be worried about us. But the truth is that it makes our job less good. I don't know. It's hard. This is like the biggest first world problem in the world, but our view has gotten worse. There's no doubt about that. You disagree?
I don't disagree. I mean, it's kind of, to me, it's part of the deal. They changed the glass. It's fine. Deal with it. We're all playing with the same conditions.
I'm not complaining. I'm saying that they did what they needed to do.
I wish they opened it more. I like the open air press box. If you, a lot of baseball ballparks have the open air, and you feel part of the game. You don't feel as removed. So I would have liked the open air, even wearing a jacket.
Here's the other thing. This is completely unrelated to football.
And then we'll talk about the game.
Do you want to talk about this now? Can I save it for later? I'll save it for later.
Okay.
So do you think it is realistic to think that Tanner McKee could be the number two quarterback? Do you think it's realistic to think they could move on from Marcus Mariota? His contract is prohibitive from whacking him unless they come to some kind of agreement. Maybe Marcus Mariota wants to leave and hit the open market so that he can find a better spot. But otherwise, it's like an $8 million cap hit, even though it's a 1 year, $5 million deal. So I don't think they're going to cut him, because even if McKee overtakes him, you might as well keep him as your third quarterback, unless he's going to leave the team again.
But, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it could be a conversation. But I think for the security purposes of having a guy who's done it, if you give Mariota a chance to be free, I'm going back to the quarterback documentary, the last episode when he signed in Philadelphia. You would have thought that he was I know Hawaii's a far away, but you would have thought that he's going to like a different planet. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, Philadelphia, that's far. Every comment was how far that it was. So I imagine he would probably try to look for a place closer to Vegas, I think, where he lives in the offseason. But no, but I think Mariota's going to be here. It makes sense. And it's going to be what I do wonder is if something were to happen to Jalen Hurts and it's an extended absence, do you go with Tanner McKee there for the reason you said? You build an offense around that arm.
And the other thing is, I mean, players know. Like, the locker room knows.
Well, they always know. Yeah, they always know first.
They're not watching what's been going on this summer and thinking they'd rather have Marcus Mariota out there. It's just.
Well, I keep going back to this, okay? I've said this on the pod. In 2017, Nick Foles was either bad or hurt. One or the other. And it was. There are stories with my byline. Do the Eagles have a problem at backup quarterback? They need Carson Wentz to stay healthy. And Nick Foles goes on to win Super Bowl MVP. And he would tell you he needed time to get right. Like, he wasn't what he needed to be that summer. But that's why you have Mariota, because he's been there.
Okay.
Are we still on?
I think we can move on from the quarterback.
I think the other big story in this game, and it's an unfortunate one, but the Eagles have been healthier on the healthy side throughout the summer. You know, Sean Bradley has had a bad injury, and Patrick Johnson's been out, and Covey and Watkins. But the injury list has been fairly forgiving for this time of year. Tonight, six guys left early. Two guys, very frightening scenes, taken off on stretchers.
And what a bad job by the crowd.
Tyree Cleveland and Mauro Ajomo. Yeah.
Tyree Cleveland wasn't moving on the field. They, like, the stretcher's coming out. They're loading them on. There was, like, the wave goes around like 10 more times. What are these people doing?
Yeah, I got to think they weren't watching the game. So that's my guess. But no, the good thing is both of them have movement in their extremities. Nick Sirianni said they're moving around. He said the team will give us more information. We don't yet have more information, but that is the latest with those two. In addition, Zach McPherson had an injury that looked serious. I'm not a doctor, but looked serious. Carted off the field. Josh Andrews, I didn't see the injury when it happened, but he was declared out pretty quickly. Then the other two injuries, Alamide Zaccheaus, he's fine. I chatted with him briefly in the locker room, said nothing to worry about. He returned to the sideline. It's a shoulder injury. And then Nolan Smith was clearly laboring. He said he was fine. Spoke to him. He said, you know, he takes care. He obviously missed six games at Georgia last year with the labrum injury. And he said tonight that it just felt like a little stinger. He could have gone back in the game. He tried to play with it. They took him out. But I guess we'll see what happens with it with Mauro Ajomo and Tyree Cleveland, both of whom have been playing well. Cleveland had a really good week this week. Ajomo's not getting the attention that the top young defensive linemen are, but he has impressed. And you just hope that they're both healthy.
Absolutely.
And then McPherson. McPherson in his case, if that's a season ender, then the Eagles are going to have to figure out what to do with backup slot. He wasn't a shorter spot on the roster.
Right.
Mario Goodrich was pushing, but Avante Maddox has been injury prone in his career. So you need to have a plan there. And then Josh Andrews, I didn't think he was going to make the 53. I thought he was a practice squad possibility for elevation, but the Eagles are particularly thin at backup center. They've been going with Julian Good-Jones a bit there this week, but certainly
Andrews
something
to
watch.
Andrews was the first one up tonight, though. Yeah.
Yep. So something to watch there.
Yeah, well said. Well, I guess we'll wait and see what the actual designations for those guys are. Yep. But in terms of the biggest roster ramifications, as long as Nolan Smith is fine, you would think, you know, if Ojomo or McPherson are out for a significant period of time, those will be interesting.
Yep.
To follow.
Speaking about positions to watch, linebacker, the Eagles purposely didn't add a linebacker this week because they want to see these guys play. And sometimes when you ask a question about a position, because the coaches name everybody, right? They try to do that. But the first one that comes to the coach's mind is sometimes an indication of the way they're thinking. And who do you think was the first one that came to their mind? He said N'Kobe Dean is our guy. But then who do you think was the first one he said? I like that group. After the game when Sirianni was talking about the linebackers.
Zach Cunningham?
Yep. And then he was asked a question about Zach Cunningham, and he He talked about how hard it is to throw over those long arms. And when they were coaching, and he pointed out the two deflections that he had. The reason Zach Cunningham started tonight is they wanted to pair him with someone who could call the defense, and that's N'Kobe Dean. But they are clear. I mean, I think Cunningham is the front runner to be that second starter next to Dean, maybe Christian Ellis.
I think I would put the turkeys right now on Cunningham and Dean. Mm-hmm. I still think, as not predicting what the Eagles want, but predicting what will eventually happen, I do think that Christian Ellis will get the most time over the course of the season. But
well, the lights just went off. The stadium. Think party's over.
I think Dean, Cunningham, and Ellis will be on the roster. Miles Jack did not play with the threes tonight. He didn't even rotate in. Those with the other guys on defense didn't play next to Nicholas Morrow.
I think he played with the threes.
He played with the threes. Yeah, he didn't play until the threes, which was different than last week when they were cycling guys through. I think it's possible that through cutdown they keep just those three linebackers,
and then see who's on the
then
wire.
See what happens.
I can see that. I mean, I specifically asked Sirianni. You know, what'd you learn about that group this week? He said, "Oh, I really like that group." He said, "You know, Dean, Dean's our guy, Cunningham, yeah." So,
and I think it would be a very
there's only one guy he didn't mention,
Ben Van Sumeren.
Yeah,
I think he did that on purpose. I think they kind of like Ben Van Sumeren.
They like him and they don't want that out
there. Yeah, okay. I think he's ticketed for the practice squad. I think it would be a funny Howie thing to keep like 13 defensive linemen and three linebackers.
You know, you got to stick to what you believe in.
You have to.
Yeah. I mean, it's true though. You don't look, and this is what Bo is. I always butter Bo up, but it's true. This is why Bo does the 53 best. It's not about the 53 you take the week one. It's about the 53 you want on that initial cut, and then you can start to do
well. And it's about how do you get how do you keep as many guys as possible in the building.
Exactly.
So, like, you know, if it was Mario Goodrich and Zach McPherson, I would have leaned they keep Zach McPherson because probably Mario Goodrich isn't going to get claimed. You can keep both guys in the building, and people probably would claim Zach McPherson, and you know, things like that. We'll see. We should. Our next episode, we should spend on going through the roster, going through the positions, and talking through the different roster machinations.
Is this my camera or is this the lighting?
I think it's the lighting.
I think it's the lighting. Yeah, I think it's the lighting.
So this game ended in a tie, Zach.
Yes. Do you remember the last tie you saw?
Yeah, Doug Peterson punting to tie. Mm-hmm. I watched against the Bengals. It was Joe Burrow's rookie year, and I spent the day. This was 2020. Just watching Carson Wentz.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good story.
It was okay. It was a little long, I think.
This is a buttering bow up pod, but Bo knows this is true. I taught a class this summer, as I talked about on here, and one of the modules was about original reporting on game day, like finding different ways to cover a team, and they all had to read that story.
Oh, really? That one?
That was one of them that they read. Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well done piece.
Poor people. What do you think of N'Kobe Dean tonight?
I have to go back and watch it. I mean, he obviously had the forced fumble there. That was
nice,
that
really
was
nice
impressive.
Play. Knifed into the backfield, read it right away.
And it's probably the first play that he's – I mean, he had a chase down tackle last year, I remember. And what game did he get in? I think of the Titans game he got into where he made a few plays. But – tonight was the first time he really made a difference. So and Nick Sirianni was especially pumped up for him.
They were getting just like leaned on down the field. Yeah. Dorian Thompson-Robinson was looking really sharp, and they drove right down the field, and they get to the 2-yard line, and then Dean gets the ball out.
Yeah. So I was impressed with that play. That's what you want to see, more flash plays, and he made a flash play there.
Well, it's like I talked to, it would be hypocritical of me when I was talking about Christian Ellis. I think like the idea for splash plays is there. Like that's, I think at that position in today's day and age, that's sort of what you want. I remain a bit of a N'Kobe Dean skeptic. I do think that he gets washed out of the play a little bit sometimes. Okay. I think the size,
yeah, you are a size
is there.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to complain about him, you know, making a nice play to force a fumble. That was well done.
Yeah.
Depth chart wise in this game, I don't know that there are a ton of notes other than the linebacker stuff that you talked about. No Reed Blankenship again tonight. It was Terrell Edmonds and Kayvon Wallace who started. Then you saw a little bit of Justin Evans there. You saw a little bit of Sidney Brown. I thought he was a little bit less maniac tonight than he was in that last game against the Ravens. On the outside, you had Josh Jobe again getting the start. Keely Ringo, I thought, had a tough night. There were a couple plays where it was an interesting dichotomy with Eli Ricks, where both of these guys were sort of in tight coverage on throws downfield, and Keely Ringo he couldn't find the ball. There was a throw from Thompson Robinson that he should have made an easy interception on, and he couldn't get his head around. He didn't really stay in phase as the ball was there. And whereas Eli Ricks seems like he has much better ball skills and a bit able to just sort of make a play on the ball.
Pick six Ricks.
That's right.
I'm with you there. I didn't think this was a good performance from Ringo. I mean, he's been hot and cold this summer. More cold than hot, I would probably say.
I would say so.
But he has had his moments. One minor depth chart thing that came up because of injury, but I'm curious your thoughts on this. Alamide Zaccheaus was the top punt returner tonight. And as you brought up, are we sure Covey makes this team?
Yeah.
And we said, well, who else is going to return punts? I mean, Zaccheaus is going to be on the team. He'd be an interesting candidate to return punts if they like him there.
Yeah, I think that's a way to save a spot.
Yeah.
How about the running backs, Zach?
Yeah, so I thought Rashad Penny had a good run tonight. Gainwell got blown up on that safety, but I thought that was Josh. I mean, Josh Sills got blown up on that safety.
Forgot what his job was.
Yeah. It's worth noting Gainwell and Scott were up. DeAndre Swift did not play. Sirianni said this was going to happen last week, but and I get it because look, everyone loves fantasy football, but there was this wide kind of thought that all right, well, Kenny Gainwell's RB, the top running back, because he didn't dress. Now Sirianni outlined what they were doing.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have a committee approach. I'd be less concerned with who takes the first snap and more concerned with who takes the most snaps. I've been saying this, Gainwell, they really trust situationally. He was that player last year, red zone, hurry up situations, 2 minute situations. They use Gainwell and I expect them to continue to use that. But I think Swift is their most explosive back. I think they also like the hard running that Penny gives them. So I think that all three are going to have roles.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they want it to be Swift as the main guy.
Yeah.
Trey Sermon had a costly fumble, but also had a nice touchdown run.
Sure.
Thanks to some good blocking from one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You think Sermon's got a shot? I mean, that touchdown run is the first nice play I have seen him make.
Yeah, so this is my thing with Sermon. I don't – I had Sermon on my last 53. Before the Ravens game, and I didn't have Boston Scott on it because they can cut Boston Scott and then re-sign him or put him on the practice squad and elevate him. He's a vested veteran. I got a text from someone after that came out that said, if Boston Scott is available, then Steichen or Reich will pick him up in a heartbeat. And I think that might be, I don't know if that's the case, but
was it Gannon?
It wasn't Gannon. No. Okay. No, it wasn't Gannon.
Was it Jeffrey?
It wasn't Jeffrey. No. but I think I'm curious with that because so this is this
blink
is
if my, it was Roger Goodell.
This is my rationale with Sermon. My rationale with Trey Sermon is that the Eagles are going to recycle this
for backfield. The audio listeners. He did blink.
The Eagles are going to recycle this backfield, next season, or they're going to do this thing again where they bring in new faces. Sermon's under contract. If you think Sermon can fill like the Penny role next year, then you might want to keep him on the team because he's under contract. But you can't just keep carrying a running back to be your future third back. You have to think that
I think the league has spoken on his value. He you know, he was claimed on waivers last year, but they couldn't get anything for him. It's not like he's done anything since until tonight. Like, I don't
sure,
know.
But I don't think the league's spoken about his value because he was claimed on waivers. He's never been on the open market.
Yeah, but he was claimed on waivers. They mm-hmm. couldn't get anything for him.
Via trade, you mean?
Right.
Okay.
And that was a second year player. It was a third round pick.
Yeah.
I also think like, if I think I've said this before, but if Kyle Shanahan and the Eagles don't think this running back is good enough, like he can't be that good.
Well, Kyle Shanahan's like known for drafting running backs that he doesn't use, and then
yeah, I mean he's a terrible drafter.
And then fine, yeah, yeah. But he does have productive running backs.
I feel like there really wasn't much else in this game. Tyler Steen had back-to-back penalties when he moved from left tackle to right guard. The offensive line play was pretty sloppy tonight. I still think Steen has been very good all summer.
Sirianni was not happy about the pre-snap penalties, in particular the one on the field goal there. Mm. With the penalties.
He can't. Don't be chewing out Olive.
He's just saying
those been here for 2 days.
He said those are the things that cost you in games.
You been watching Hard Knocks?
I haven't yet. I want to catch up.
Oh,
been a little behind. The punter situation.
Woody Johnson is such a joke.
Yeah, you're not a Woody fan.
No, I think the most revealing scene of the entire series so far was Robert Saleh and Woody Johnson. And they're talking about Quinn and Williams, and Sal is like, yeah, like that's, you know, that's why Joe and I said, you know, advocated for us to pay this guy because he's, you know, not only is he so good, but he's like, he's wired like that. He's not going to just let the money get to him. And the only thing Woody says is, it was a lot of money. Like, if you're not happy to pay Quinn and Williams, then why are you an owner? Like why that's the whole thing. Like,
well, that's true. That is true. Yeah, I mean, it's that is true. He paid a market value, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
He's one of the best players in the league. One of the most important positions.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's a lot of money. Send me back to Ireland.
I don't think it was Ireland.
Wasn't it Ireland?
No, I think it was. I think it was Great Britain, like the UK.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I don't think it was Ireland.
Okay,
well, I think he was in London.
It's a scumbag either way.
Yeah. I don't know that.
It's the first time I've gotten you to go on the record.
No, I don't know that. Scumbag.
I'll take that. Thank you. 1:49 a.m. on.
No, no, no. I was just moving on with the conversation. He's been very kind to me. So I'm like, I wrote a story back in 2010 on, I was at the Star Ledger, 2010. New Meadowlands Stadium was opening up. Now MetLife,
and that stadium.
I did a story on how that deal came together, and I had an opening anecdote. The governor at the time, I believe his name was Richard Cody.
You know what that state? You know what he said about that stadium?
What?
Cost a lot of money.
No, the whole thing was about. I think the Jets' original proposal was for like this futuristic. Stadium, and then the Giants was like this really classy
of course, you know, that's how you described it in the story.
Like stadium, and like they were at odds, and it was almost gonna be like Soldier Field where mm-hmm. you know there's like this melting of mm-hmm. these two things, and so they came to a disagreement on, I mean, it's kind of like an antiseptic stadium, right? It's just very generic.
Yeah, it sucks,
right? But
so he liked that you wrote that it sucked.
No, it was I got kind of like a lot of background about the negotiations and all that, and so I was new at the Star Ledger at the time, and I appreciated the time that was granted. I was proud of that story, and I was like,
man. Yeah, I mean, if a guy gives you like 20 minutes of his time, that does not outweigh him being a bad human being.
Well, no, I don't know.
Just so you know.
I recognize that, but I'm just saying, he was nice to me that year, and I don't, I can't speak any more otherwise. I don't have enough information otherwise.
Okay. It's like the, you know, the classic, you know, someone who is nice to you and mean to the waiter is not a nice person.
Oh, I agree with that for sure.
All right. So someone who gives you a good interview and
I have a question.
And voluntarily works for
I'm gonna push
a demon.
So
that's not a good person.
But then when someone's nice to the waiter, you don't like that.
I don't not like being nice to the waiter. I don't like necessarily
nice.
Agree
you get on
that
being
performative
nice
with the waiter is being nice.
I wouldn't call it being performative. I would call it being being friendly, being conversational, being, you know,
we don't need to get into the whole.
Yeah. I was walking in tonight and I was with someone from the Browns and they remarked, they said, all the security people know you here. And I said, yeah, I say hello to every one of them. And now they all have their badges on. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with that.
You had a great, we had a great moment in the press box today.
Yeah.
On the outskirts of the press box.
Outskirts of the press box, yes. Yes, my son's first football
game. Green's first game.
Yeah. He wanted to see where I work. You know, the coolest part about this job is you get to do what you love. I don't want to say the worst part of this job, but like the downside of this job is you can't experience football through his eyes. Like I'll never be able to take him to a game, which is fine because I mean,
take a week off.
No,
I take him to one game.
But he was so he came to his first game with my father-in-law tonight, and he wanted to see the press box. I walked
in. And where were they sitting?
They were sitting with Marissa Dunn.
One row, coincidentally, one row ahead.
Yes,
that's wild. Pretty cool.
What'd you think of 68 tonight?
I thought it looked good. You know, there were a couple tough ones again where it's him and Christian Ellis. Like, there's no winners there.
Tough situation for Michael. This clip that's been going.
Oh yeah,
this clip that's been going around. Yeah, and didn't
with
like
Jalen Carter. I didn't like that either. I heard some you know, some scuttlebutt about that play where Bill Callahan, the Browns coach, was sort of like egging on Jalen Carter, like talking a little smack before that snap. He sort of was like writing a check that Michael Dunn had to cash. It doesn't seem very fair to Michael.
It reminds me last year when Brandon Graham was trash talking. Who was it? Someone who Kelsey had to block.
Oh yeah.
Kelsey's like, you don't have to block
it. It was Dexter Lawrence.
Dexter Lawrence. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Kelsey's like, what are you doing, man? It's
like, come on, man.
Yeah, don't get this guy rattled up.
Okay. I don't know that there's much else from this game.
No, there wasn't much else for this game. Ending of a week, an important week for the Eagles. They had a good practice Tuesday. Not a great game tonight, but it was fine.
Lean in there.
It was fine. And then just setting the scene, the Eagles are back at practice Saturday, Sunday. And Tuesday, the Indianapolis Colts come to town. So you get to see your buddy Shane Steichen. You get to see your buddy Chris Ballard.
Matt Pryor still on the roster?
No, he's on San Francisco. Yeah.
That's too bad.
I believe he's on San Francisco. You get to see Gardner Minshew. They might have a few other guys that are familiar faces. But, yeah, the Colts are in town. So that's on Tuesday. And that's the last practice of the summer that we get to see.
That's right. Sad.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's my take. This is the last thing I got.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little tired. So
I have not had to deal with this. You know, I play the NL only baseball league, right?
Yeah, which is weird.
So you've had to deal with this.
It's such an antiquated concept.
It's not antiquated. The roster crunch is better. It's more, and here's the thing, and this is why it's better, because it's more reflective of like what a real roster would look like, right? That's the entire purpose of fantasy sports is to create some semblance of like analogy to the real sport, right? And so I do not understand why it is like the widely accepted way of doing things, and it's just, this is how it is, that Shohei Ohtani, you can only play him as one thing.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Well, because it's a weekly league, right?
He is
like a
unicorn of a player. He should be that. It should be reflected in fantasy. You should be able to play him as a hitter and a pitcher. That's insane that you can't.
Yeah.
It's really stupid.
I agree. He should get stats for both. I agree with
that. And that's how it is on all of these platforms, right?
Yes, but if you're in a daily league, I think you can move him around. If you're in a weekly league, you got to set him. So typically
that is nuts.
And oftentimes you try to take advantage of pitchers starting twice because of their spread out rotation. He doesn't really get the two starts that much either.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
He is a baseball player who does both things. Yeah, on your fantasy baseball roster, he should get to do both things.
Yeah, I am with you there. I am with you. I'm with you there.
That's so dumb.
I'm against you on the NL only thing, but I'm with you there. So where I will disagree, I agree with you on the Ohtani point. Where I disagree with you is I don't look at fantasy baseball, for me at least, as like, how am I, being a GM right now, assembling the roster? I am looking at it like, all right, this is going to allow me to follow, I'm not going to watch all 30 clubs every night. Like this gives me a reason to be checking box scores every night. And like,
that's your purpose for doing it. But the idea behind the game.
Well, sure. Yeah. I got a really good farm system in my league. So
I bet you do.
Yeah. Jackson Shorio.
Okay. That's one.
Emmanuel Rodriguez. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 4 draft picks next year. So
how deep are the farms?
You have 4, you can have up to 4 minor leaguers, and then you can, but the next year, so going into next year, you can either have 2 minor leaguers, 2 draft picks. You can only have 4 spots between minor leaguers and draft picks.
And you have 4 picks next year?
Yeah. It's just going to be trade bait. I've accumulated picks.
Okay.
Yeah. Made some true trades.
And what place are you in?
I'm in 5th.
Out of 10 or 12?
16, 10 or 12, 16. Okay. I'm in 16. Yeah.
Not good enough.
Not good enough to win, but 5th is the number one pick in the in the prospect draft.
Okay.
And next year's a loaded prospect draft. I mean, you got Dylan Cruz. You got Walker Jenkins. You got
Paul Skeens.
Yeah, but I don't love pitchers that early. The
Wyatt Langford.
Yeah, Wyatt Langford. Thank you. So there's some interesting players there. We don't need to be talking about this at 158.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the Ohtani thing is like, it's one of those things where it's like, what is everybody thinking? I don't understand this.
I agree. Well,
how did this become just widely accepted?
I agree.
All right. Well, I think we're going to remember this night forever, Zach. this is the Tanner McKee to the city. That's what I give him.
Mm, good pun.
Yeah. Tanner McTurkey.
Let's wrap this up.
Okay. That'll do it for this episode of Birds with Friends. For Zach and Tanner and Marissa.
And the bad lighting. Yeah.
And the bad lighting. And Michael and Madison. And Reed, his first game. We thank you for listening. We will talk to you later. We'll tell you when that is. And as always, we love you.